Welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a program dedicated to informing you about organizations that serve our community and how you can get involved with them. Here's your host, Chris Evans.
Good morning and welcome to Focus on the Upstate, a pre-recorded production of Entercom Communications. My name is Chris Evans and this is episode 3 of the COVID Chronicles. I've never done an episode 3 before, let alone an episode 2 that we did last week. And my guest again is Dr. Saria Sicosio, the Ambulatory Chief Medical Officer at Prisma Health. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Chris.
Thank you for being here. Remind us what it is you do for Prisma Health.
All things COVID-19 these days, Chris.
Yes, I guess so.
I will say that my focus has been on our outpatient practices and our connection to our healthcare facilities or hospitals that we're working with. So supporting the Incident Command Center any way possible related to COVID-19 right now and all things outpatient as well.
So COVID is not going anywhere, apparently. Much to everybody's chagrin, I think. We would all prefer that it went away and everything could go back to normal, but we still seem at this point to be on the upswing. The most recent numbers that I saw today are, and again, mentioning that this is pre-recorded, so the numbers may have changed by the time you're listening to this, but there are around 250,000 cases in the United States, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down. Is that the indication that you're getting, Doctor?
That's exactly what I'm seeing, and I've recognized the same numbers that are coming out of the United States, to be specific. 250,000 patients nearly have been tested COVID-19 positive, over 6,000 deaths at this point. Now, South Carolina's trajectory may be a little bit behind some of our larger cities, such as New York City, as we're aware of, but we know we'll be hitting our peak around April 28th. At least that's what our current projections are showing us.
Okay, so the end of April is where we expect the curve to peak.
Yes, hopefully so, and then start to bend downward.
Okay.
And again, that's with what we know today.
And that's what everybody's been trying to work on is flattening that curve. It's a phrase that's become very nearly overused at this point. But that's the idea is that we want to get that peak as low as we can so that hospitals are not overwhelmed with the sheer number of patients that they have to deal with at any given time. How are things going at Prisma right now? Are you seeing a greater influx of patients?
Yes, we're starting to see those numbers creep up slightly. And so far, we have adequate equipment and facilities, and we're trying to think two steps ahead, Chris,
right,
so that we are prepared for that peak as it occurs. So while we are several weeks away from that peak, we have already begun those discussions and we have partnerships with the National Guard looking at the opportunities to expand our facility services as needed as we see that number increase and anticipate that over April.
And what's the projection there? How many patients do you expect to have to serve at a given time?
I don't have those numbers in front of me
right now,
but as we're looking at those numbers and how they're expanding, we recognize that we'll have more patients who will be requiring ventilation or to be intubated or on a ventilator machine to help them breathe. We also want to make sure that we have adequate beds available for those patients who aren't on a ventilator but perhaps need some oxygen or some minor hospital care.
I know that a few weeks ago we were talking about, and not necessarily you and I, but the country in general was talking about not having enough test kits to test all of the potential cases of COVID-19 that we're presenting. And I also gather that recently we've gotten more and more of those and we are doing more and more testing. Some has been made about the numbers that have come out of China that they're not particularly trustworthy, even after the World Health Organization has gotten involved, that we mentioned right now 250,000 cases here in the United States, but they're still sitting around 80 or 85,000. And it's easy to be skeptical of those kinds of numbers, but I'm looking at the numbers that we have. Is there a sense that the increased testing that we're doing is making the problem seem worse than it might be?
That is certainly a possibility. And what we have learned over the last 60, 90 days about COVID-19 has helped us identify the most appropriate screening guidelines.
Okay.
To your point, we do have adequate supplies. Granted, they are limited, but it's allowed us to test for patients and to capture the data that we've learned from China, so that we could have a better system in place as we have seen COVID-19 spread throughout the world. So as they were the first site, we've been able to capture that information, improve the system because of that, and learn from those opportunities to get better care and recognize at earlier detection points.
Well, and not just comparing China and the United States, but countries all over the world have had different trajectories for the course that the virus has taken. What is it that affects the transmission rates and the vectors in other countries? Is it, I mean, things that occur to me are things like population density, maybe their public policies, whatever, you know, measures they're taking in their individual locations to mitigate the spread of the virus. What is it that makes those curves different in different places?
Well, all of those factors certainly play into this equation. Something else we've seen and learned from, for example, Italy, is they have a high age group population of geriatric patients or those over 65. And for that reason, and recognizing the increase in mortality rate with that population, that's also where you're going to see some changes in mortality rates and infection rates as we consider social distancing, who is following those policies, who's been strict and conservative for those measures versus in other areas where that's just not the case.
Gotcha. One of the things that I wanted to talk about today are the treatments that people are going through for coronavirus. And because there's been a lot of news recently that there's a lot of fake remedies around, and I want to make sure that people have the information about what works and what doesn't. There was recently a news story about hundreds of people in Iran dying because they ingested methanol because somebody had told them that it would kill the virus. Now, the hand sanitizers that we're being admonished to use have ethanol in them, which is the same kind of alcohol that you find in beer and wine and spirits. Methanol is a different kind of alcohol, and it's poisonous. And so you wouldn't want to put that inside your body, but if you rub it on a surface, it will kill the virus. Is that correct?
Yeah, and I think a really important point, as we're seeing opportunists rise to the surface,
yes,
we're seeing several scams across the country, across the globe, essentially. And so what's important is referring back to the CDC guidelines. And so that's cdc.gov for us specifically in South Carolina. DHEC is doing a good job of putting recommendations and updated guidelines out there. And for the same reason that you mentioned, methanol is certainly not safe to ingest.
No.
Ingesting ethanol in large volumes can also not be safe for you. So what we put on the surfaces doesn't necessarily mean it works the same way if you ingest it and swallow those dangerous chemicals. So that's also very important. Following the recommendations of your healthcare providers is critical at this point. What is exciting is the rapid adoption and trials of many different medication regimens. We've learned so much just week to week so far of what medications might be effective against COVID-19 and others that we thought maybe aren't necessarily going to pan out. So stay tuned. And as we learn more, we'll have better information.
Well, and that's kind of something that I wanted to get into with you, but I wanted to continue. You mentioned opportunists. And another thing that I wanted to mention as far as fake remedies goes is that they're now coming out dietary supplements that that you can take and people are marketing them as, you know, prevents coronavirus or cures coronavirus or things like that. And officially, there is no cure for coronavirus at this point.
That is absolutely correct. Nothing that has been identified in the literature as of yet. So if someone is promising you that they can cure or prevent COVID-19, run in the other direction.
Run in the other direction. And some of the things that are coming up are things that you hear about people taking for virtually any illness: echinacea, zinc, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, things like that. But there's nothing supporting the idea that any of those will cure or even prevent coronavirus.
That's right, Chris.
Okay.
Again, I have not seen any literature to prove those at the level of clinical trials and what's appropriate for validating a true impact.
Gotcha. There's one more thing that I wanted to mention, and honestly, I hesitate to even mention it because I was able to tell immediately when I heard this rumor that it was false. And so I have a concern about continuing to spread the rumor, but I also want to make sure that people who have heard it recognize that it's false. There was a story going around this week about some doctors in hospitals issuing DNR orders, do not resuscitate orders, for patients that they deemed were, I don't know, not worth the effort of attempting life-saving remedies on. That cannot be true.
That's right. There's no upfront response for that that says patients will be a DNR or a do not resuscitate as they walk in the door. However, as we recognize that we're not even to our peak yet. Other cities, other states, and across the globe, we are having conversations of what do you do if you run out of ventilators? What do you do if you run out of beds? And we are trying to plan ahead with our ethics committees and what's been recommended across the country of when to consider saving patterns and what that looks like. That is not treated lightly and something that continues to be discussed as we go forward. But there is no blanket when you walk in the door that you will not be saved or you automatically have a scarlet letter, so to speak.
Right. Well, and doctors and hospital staff in general sort of have an obligation to try everything they can to save your life if you're in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. And this is an excellent point for families to be talking about their advanced directives. So what do I mean by advanced directives? That's a conversation that's really important for you to be clear on as an individual and to share with your family members of what are your wishes.
Right.
Do you wish to be put on a ventilator? Do you wish for feeding tubes? Or in other cases, this is way before COVID-19.
Sure.
This is a conversation we wish people were having before they were diagnosed with a terminal cancer, for example, or other terminal condition, but one that's very appropriate to be having right now.
Well, and that's another point that I wanted to make about it is that doctors are not the ones that issue do not resuscitate orders. That's something a patient requests. They make a request. If I wind up in a condition where you might have to take extraordinary measures to prolong my life, I don't want that to happen. I want you not to resuscitate me and let me go. It's not something that's imposed by the hospital.
That's correct. But let's be clear.
Okay.
The physician is the individual who places the order or writes the order.
Right.
It's
okay.
According to patient wishes, family wishes. And that's certainly, we could have an entire radio show on just advanced directives, Chris.
I bet we could. But you're right. The doctor has to place the order, but it's made at the decision of the patient, not at the decision of the doctor. Doctors have the unenviable task of having to decide whether somebody is dead, to curtail the attempts to save somebody's life when they've determined that nothing is going to work to bring this person back. But it's not like they're deciding who will get those life-saving treatments and who won't.
That's true, generally speaking. And if we were at the point where we did not have adequate supplies for everyone, there's also conversations about disaster preparedness. And this is discussed at wartime levels. So not where we are today, but one that we prepare for.
Right.
Because we recognize in this country that we need to learn from others and be thinking ahead so we're not caught off guard and can prepare as much as possible.
That's good. We've talked about some of the fake remedies that are out there for coronavirus. Let's talk about some of the true, not necessarily remedies, but some of the things that people can do if they wind up being diagnosed, but they are not hospitalization cases. What is the advice from doctors for weathering this particular infectious storm?
Well, first of all, it's important to isolate yourself to others. So very important if you're sick yourself with COVID-19 to isolate even from your family members if possible, so that if they have not been infected, that you do not infect them. So that's step one. For yourself and for your treatment, it's really important that we focus on supportive measures. Supportive measures are those that help control a fever, because a fever can be uncomfortable, with Tylenol or other fever-reducing medical agents. Getting plenty of rest,
yes.
Taking care of yourself, having adequate nutrition. So much like you would with any other virus, this is how we would recommend you treat yourself.
And that's basically what I was going to ask, is the advice going to be different from, you know, a cold or the flu? Just rest, drink a lot of fluids, and make sure that you take something to reduce your fever. That's pretty much all you can do on your own, isn't it?
That is true. At this time, this is where we stand. As we have clinical trials that evolve, maybe we'll learn something new as of next week. So there are some promising opportunities out there, but again, we're still waiting to see what the evidence is showing us.
On the point of fever reducers, there's another report that's going around. I don't know how corroborated it is, but the idea that ibuprofen in particular might worsen the conditions of COVID-19 infections, that's something that people would normally take. Have you heard this? Do you have any information about ibuprofen making COVID-19 symptoms worse rather than better?
Yes, so that's a great question and one that we have seen pop up in many conversations. And there was some concern that because of COVID-19, there may be an impact on your kidneys. Mm. And as we know, NSAIDs, nonsteroidals, or ibuprofen or others can potentially also work on your kidneys. You would treat this the same way you would any other situation if someone was in kidney failure. ibuprofen is not a medication you typically give. However, for a typical virus, ibuprofen is safe. And what we've learned is that there's no contraindication or an absolute recommendation against ibuprofen. So you would still continue to use it the way that you have in the past for other viruses or for symptom management.
Gotcha.
Don't overdo it. Don't take more than what's recommended on the bottle.
Which is always good advice. How would Prisma go about treating a case in the hospital?
Well, it will certainly be personalized according to the patient's individual condition. We receive patients at all levels of instability. If you are in the hospital, you may need oxygen to help you breathe. You may need IV fluids if you become dehydrated. If you're having significant trouble breathing, you may be transitioned to one of our intensive care units and be placed on a ventilator. So again, it very much depends on your current condition and level of stability of what resources you might need. There's also a possibility that respiratory or breathing treatments might be helpful.
How many people need ventilators?
That's still a small percent. The projections that we've seen for overall hospitalization for COVID-19 positive patients is falling out about 10 to 12%. Now, I can't tell you exactly how many of that 10 to 12% of COVID-19 positive patients will need ventilated, but it's significantly lower. And for those reasons, we've been able to manage so far with our ventilators. However, what we've learned about COVID-19 patients who have required a ventilator, many of them have needed many days on a ventilator. And that's where we run into challenges with supplies and why you've heard the stories across the country of why we might need to share ventilators.
Just because a single ventilator is occupied for so long.
That's right.
Gotcha. You mentioned earlier some upcoming treatments that show potential for use in treating COVID-19. And I want to kind of come at this delicately. Off-label drugs, it's not unheard of, certainly, for doctors to prescribe particular medications for something other than their originally intended use. One of the pieces of advice that you frequently hear, especially during flu season, is if you get a cold, if you get a flu, if you get a virus like that, don't take antibiotics because they don't work on viruses. But much has been made about the drug chloroquine, which is an anti-malaria drug, and malaria is a parasite. Is there a reason to believe or a reason not to believe that an antiparasitic like that would be effective against a virus?
Well, some early studies have shown that perhaps there's some benefit to chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine. That is a medication that is being used and experimented with to see if it continues to have an impact on patients. You mentioned antibiotics. There's one particular antibiotic, azithromycin, that is being considered that might have an impact on COVID-19 as well. But this is not something that we recommend for everyone. There has been primary focus on hospitalized patients who perhaps need something in addition to supportive care. So you heard me mention that 10 to 12% of patients are requiring hospitalization. That shares with you 82 to 85% experience a mild illness. So because we're still trying to figure out what works against this virus, that's why we don't recommend that universal treatment, and there's not the supply necessary through chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. So that's one challenge.
We're still waiting for the clinical testing to determine how effective chloroquine might be.
That's right. That's right. Some say yes, and some say maybe it's not all it was cracked up to be. So, and I'm making sure that I don't pass judgment until I have that data in front of me. Hence the reason why vaccines are not developed overnight and why there's that very realistic projection that it won't be available except a year from when we first started with COVID-19, because we've got to make sure, for one, that it's safe to patients and the public, and that it actually works and has an impact. So that goes for medications as well.
We've talked about chloroquine, and you also mentioned azithromycin. Are there any other off-label drugs that that people suspect might be effective against coronavirus?
There are several, Chris. In fact, many guidelines are now recommending numerous medications that are being considered, that there's active research being done today with patients to evaluate. One is a monoclonal antibody therapy or immunotherapy. So we're still early on in those conversations. So again, a very long list of potential medications. And I have been so impressed with our academic colleagues and the rapid innovation that we're seeing develop week over week. So So stay tuned. We will continue to see more updates and more information that comes available on what is helpful or what may not be helpful.
We talked a little bit, I believe, in the last episode about blood donation and how the current coronavirus epidemic is affecting that. There's also been a suggestion that plasma transfusions from people who have recovered from COVID-19 might be an effective treatment. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, I've heard some discussion from my academic colleagues across the country. There's consideration of antibody testing. Even what does that tell us? What can we learn from it? What type of blood transfusions may be helpful or not? These are still in early stages of clinical research, so we don't have an outcome yet, but certainly something that's being considered in our research communities.
In a community or even a national sense, what are we doing right and what are we not doing right?
What we're doing right is focusing on washing hands.
Okay.
And we're having the conversations. What is important is that everyone is following those recommendations. Where we're still struggling across the country is appropriate social distancing. And one of our challenges is state by state, there are different recommendations, even for neighboring states. Mm. So we're all trying to sort this out and figure out what's best, what do we need to do. This is what we know. Social distancing certainly has an impact on flattening the curve. That's important to hear. I recently become aware of a New York Times article that shared cell phone activity and the travel location by location by individuals. And it is impressive and also somewhat scary to see just how much people are traveling locally and across state borders when we've been asked for social distancing.
We are coming up on the end of the program, and I want to make sure that we mention PrismaHealth.org. You mentioned the CDC.gov as a place to get more information. PrismaHealth.org/coronavirus is another website that you can go to, especially to get local information about treating and avoiding catching coronavirus. And, of course, our website, the Intercom website, 1063WORD.com, will have more news and information regarding state closings and other developments that are not necessarily medical in nature.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things I'd like to hit on before our program closes for today, Chris. And one is, let's get back to living at the same time. And of course, we've had to focus on COVID-19 and the pandemic that's ahead of us,
well,
and social distancing.
It's tough to balance the social distancing with just living your life.
That's right. And we're having those conversations within our health system and with our patients. So here is my message to our listeners and to the public is you've got to continue to take care of your health. If you have a chronic disease such as diabetes or hypertension, your provider will be reaching out to you to make sure that we're controlling your high blood pressures to prevent a stroke and a heart attack, that we're controlling your diabetes to protect your kidneys or to protect against foot ulcers or other complications we see with diabetes. Please continue to connect with your providers, whether it's in person when it's appropriate, but especially through telehealth. And this is really important, and capability of technology that we have today based on the resources we provided to the system. We have video visits, so you can actually see your doctor or see your provider face-to-face through a video to take care of your needs. And we also want to make sure that you stay well. So we're having conversations about wellness visits for our patients who are over 65. Now, here's what's different for children. It's really important that they continue to stay on schedule with their well child checks. If you can imagine the number of vaccines that can help prevent other diseases that can be dangerous as well. We want to make sure those children are getting in to see their providers. And those vaccines are one of the most important things that we can do to keep them well. But we need to continue to stay connected. In a time where we see greater levels of depression or worsening of anxiety because of what we're dealing with today, stay connected to your providers. And that's what we're hearing from our psychiatrists and our therapists as well, that people are reaching out. So going to our PrismaHealth.org/coronavirus website will help guide you to the best way to connect with your provider or call them on their phone. They're still available. They're still in their offices, and they are here to take care of you.
Well, and on the subject of telemedicine, I know that you also offer the Prisma Go app. There's an app for that. And I know that the community appreciates that sort of opportunity to be able to connect with doctors over the internet.
Yes, and it's amazing, Chris, how many 85 or 90-year-olds have figured out how to connect with their smartphones, with their providers. And for those who are struggling, get a family member. Have one of these younger individuals who are technologically savvy help you out to connect to your health.
I am that family member. I'm the one that people ask for advice on that.
Yeah. So then to help your other family members who are struggling, so I'll say this to our younger generation, be that service for your grandparents or your parents who desperately need to maintain their health by relieving some of that intimidation or worry that they can't figure out how to connect through video. We are so thankful for our listeners, for the public, for reaching out. This past week was Doctor's Day, and everyone has been hard at work taking care of patients on the front line, every single healthcare worker. And it has been phenomenal and has evoked so much emotion in a very positive way to see written in chalk, thank you, keep doing what you're doing, you're making a difference. And we're so grateful for those comments. It keeps us going. It reminds us that we're making a difference. And I also want to thank folks for the donations they've made. It's been incredible to see the outreach from the public, both financially and with PPE supplies or those protective equipment supplies that people have sent forward as well. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, on behalf of the Upstate community, you're welcome. Dr. Saria Sicosio, the Ambulatory Chief Medical Officer at Prisma Health, has been my guest today and will continue to be my guest for the foreseeable future as we continue with the COVID Chronicles in this time of national and even global pandemic. Thank you very much, Doctor, for being here.
And thank you. We are one day closer in getting through this together.
I'm Chris Evans, and this has been Focus on the Upstate.
You've been listening to Focus on the Upstate with Chris Evans. If you would like more information on today's topic, email Chris at cevans@intercom.com.